You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
And now, two guys who go together like bacon and eggs. Your host, Lou Costanzo, and Dr. James, don't call him Jim, Roberts.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Imaginary Friend. I am Paul from Scotland.
And I'm James from London.
And I'm Lou from Nebraska. Paul from Scotland. Are you the same Paul Finch that we last spoke to for Season 2, Episode 4, The Outrageous Akana?
Yes, I am that one and the same.
How have you been, mate?
I've been good. So we still, me and Adam still have a podcast in Purgatory. We basically did really well getting through Seasons 1, 2, and 3 Enterprise, hit Season 4, and then didn't really know what to do when the show got good. it was so much fun kind of making sort of fun of bad episodes, and then when it got really good, suddenly we didn't really know what to do with it. So we've had a good few years hiatus. We do intend to finish it. Adam actually came up to Edinburgh and spent a long weekend with us in December, where we intended to record a couple of episodes, but other stuff like drinking got in the way. So we do intend to finish it. Maybe for Adam's 40th birthday, we'll finish it.
Mm. And what's the name of it?
Previously in the Alpha Quadrant.
Okay. All right, then. You heard it, folks. Eventually, we'll be there. They'll be there. Am I missing, or has anybody started a Discovery podcast yet?
I think there's a Trek FM one. In fact, I did an episode with Colin. So there's not maybe one, there's definitely one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lou. Yeah. That was the one that Colin mentioned. He was on with you, right? Paul?
Yes.
Yeah. Was Colin on at the same time? Yeah.
Yes, Colin kind of invited me on it to talk about stuff. Because I did quite a few with Colin back in the days where he did the Trek News and Views podcast.
Okay.
So are you up to date with Discovery then?
Yes, I'm totally up to date. I was seeing kind of this Monday's one. I'm not sure what kind of date it airs in the US, but so I must say that I've kind of gone from thinking it was pretty mediocre to downright bad to kind of having my expectations raised a bit, and now actually, that it's gotten a bit of a groove, actually quite enjoying it. I'm not sure how not sure if everyone else's kind of, wave with it has gone the same, or if I kind of got the general opinion is that most hardcore Star Trek fans, like Star Trek fans tend to do, didn't like the new series, which I think is pretty much par for the course.
Yeah.
So, I've been up and down on it somewhat, but. And I'm sure I'll be able to give more concise thoughts at some point, and maybe just have it kind of grow on me. But one question that I do have: what the hell are they going to do for season two? Right?
Well, I'm sort of assuming that this is going to be like a timeline quirk, where actually, where they've gotten the point of the kind of run at the moment is, if they continued the story where they kind of left it off with the cliffhanger, the last episode, then the whole kind of future is going to be different. So I'm assuming there's going to be some kind of resetting of the timeline. Maybe they go back to the events of the first episode and kind of stop the war from happening. Because I don't think in kind of Star Trek lore there's really much mention of this particular war. So I'm wondering if they just sort of undo that, and it's kind of like, you know, the Dallas shower scene where, oh, it was just sort of a dream. It happened. We've reset the timeline now. And then maybe season two, they're going to be like, oh, well, we know how to do time travel now, so maybe we'll just like go around and visit some other Star Trek timelines. Hmm. I'm not really sure, but yeah, I think they've kind of, it's been a kind of flash in the pan story so far. I don't really see how they can make a season two out of it, unless they're just going to like, oh, we'll have a war with the Romulans now.
So in the latest episode, there was a particular line that generally made me step back and go, well, you can't really top that. But it's when Saru goes, you know, if our plan fails, we're going to destroy all life in all universes. And you think, well, what the heck? How could he raise that? It would be very strange if, like, you know, next year they started to go to, like, to much smaller stories, like, you know, or we have to go and make sure the, you know, Andorian ambassador doesn't get upset, or, you know, one of these ridiculous TNG stories that every now and again come up where, I don't know, with this week with the imaginary friend, or a few weeks back with Roxana Troi. It doesn't feel that those kind of episodes would fit into the, you know, fit into the Discovery setup.
I couldn't really imagine their kind of version of Data's Day, like,
you know, indeed, yes,
Surak's Day, where he just kind of, you know, was around and, you know, oh, he's eating breakfast, and now he's going to go and, you know, talk to the doctor about, you know, his feelings.
I mean, even their version of cause and effect required, you know, the captain to be shot in the face like 60 times. Close range, and I just don't see how they can do it, which is fine. I mean, it can just be different. My worry that I have is that, you know, once they're able to tell the story that they've clearly got the story arc for the first season, right? I think it's very clear that they had that from day one. My worry is that, similar to shows like, I mean, I was a big fan of the original series of Heroes, the original series of Heroes, original series of Orphan Black, original series of kind of like a couple of others that really go all out. They go to 11 on season one. Then they get commissioned for a 5-year run, and then it's like, well, we don't know what to do. We can either do more of that, or you're kind of like stuck in a place where you have to continually kind of like up the ante.
I read a kind of original concept for what Netflix were going to do with the new Star Trek series, and a few of the rumors were like, oh, it's going to be a bit like American Horror Story, where it's almost like every season is a completely new story. It's sort of set in the same universe, but they're just telling different stories. And I thought, that'd be cool. Like, maybe they'll do it with one crew where they're maybe like a, you know, they could go to like the 30th century thing, like, you know, the Captain Braxton, where he adventures through the timeline and he's got to go back and fix stuff. And, oh, look, we can go and like see Riker and his ship. And then, you know, on our episode, maybe they do something in the Kirk era and blah, blah, blah. But I think it's quite clear that's not really the direction they're going in. Unless Discovery, like, you know, because they now fixing all the mistakes of the past or whatever. I don't know, but yeah, I find it kind of, it's almost been like such a high-paced season. I don't see how it's going to, how they're going to top that in a new season, unless they just do another war.
No, sure. And the other thing that they've done is that they've burned through the characters very quickly. And not just burned through the characters, but also burned through the mirror universe of the characters equally as quickly. And you've ended up with, I mean, from, obviously, the first pilot, right? You jettisoned the original, you know, Shinto crew, and then you ended up with the Discovery bunch, of which a good proportion have been kind of removed from the storyline, or at least it appears at the moment that I would say, like, you know, maybe like two of them could probably continue on a kind of like a personal growth story. I think a lot of people are either dead, incarcerated, or damaged beyond what you could realistically have as a continuing thread. And I'm not, you know, it's fine to do that, but you almost have to bring in a fresh blood on this one.
I'm sort of really kind of worried about them now, like, you know, obviously at some point they're going to have to touch on existing canon, like, you know, I'm assuming that the Enterprise, that they mention, they kind of mention Constitution class ships and mention the Enterprise. So is the Enterprise in this sort of scenario, is it running around with Kirk, or is it, what's his face, wheelchair beep beep boy? Is he Captain Pike? Yeah, is he kind of at the Enterprise helm at the moment? Like, are we going to see like a really bad CGI model of the Constitution class up against the Discovery that kind of just looks like a pizza cutter?
So I have an Enterprise pizza cutter at the moment, but I'll pay good money for a Discovery pizza cutter, especially if it can.
I got an Enterprise pizza cutter too.
I mean, if the saucer section, for want of a better word, could rotate independently, so the inner and the outer circle, you know, that'd be really cool.
I'm interested to see how they're going to get out of the. Well, why doesn't every ship in the future have some sort of mushroom engine? Like, what happens that this technology either becomes unusable, or you know what? Because, like, you know, Captain Janeway, she could have done with a mushroom engine. You know, that would have saved a lot of trouble.
I mean, I have to say that one of the things that does cause me pain with Discovery is that now I don't know if this is to be true. Maybe I'm going to make unfair accusations here, but it feels like the science advisors have gone from being scientists to people who like science fiction, and. You know, we're about to review the episode today with TNG, and there's a lot of nonsense in this as well. But they take nonsense and they dial it up on Discovery. And I would prefer if it was slightly less mushroom engine based. But yeah. maybe that's me.
It's nonsense with holograms, isn't it? I've got to say the kind of interface. Sort of look, the kind of what modern day what you call a kind of user experience design of the ship is pretty cool, but it's again like, why this time period? Like, just, you know, we all know the jelly buttons on the Enterprise, and if you're going to make us believe that US Defiant is kicking around the mirror universe, we assume it looks like the kind of, you know, the Enterprise inside. Why would it look any different? So why not just set it somewhere else where there's no other stories to butt heads with?
Yeah, that's something that I kind of agree with. I don't see what they have done in terms of touching canon so far that has been kind of like a net positive. So
added like this new like Spock sister. Oh, it's a Spock sister. You never heard about her.
But I don't think there's that. There's no reason to. I don't feel that I care more about the character because it's Spock's sister, and I don't particularly care that they bring in Sarek, and I don't particularly care. Also, I mean, in fact, it's not even that I don't care. I was actively hostile to them bringing in Mudd. But then, if you just park those two things, those few things, and say, look, we're going to tell exactly the same story, but it's going to be in the 27th century, and instead of it being the Klingons, it's going to be the, you know, Ooga Boogas. You can just replay everything exactly the same, and you don't cause this, you know, this friction between, you know, what has been already done, and then
you could say, oh, they found this like magical mushroom drive, so, and they're like, oh well, you know, they advanced, and this is the thing they found out, and
I think that the way they're going, that they have to undo a fair amount of stuff that they do in order to get you back onto the timeline. Unless they're just going to say, look, you know, sod it. But if you're going to say sod it, then why is it in? Why is it pre-Kirk? There's no reason for it to be pre-Kirk.
I'm sort of wondering if they're maybe go, oh, we thought we came back to our universe, but actually we just came back to a universe where the Klingons won the war. And that's, we meant to go like, you know, five universes to the left, and that's back to ours. Or maybe they're just from a alternative universe that's, you know, where the Federation plays like differently. Who knows? But it just, yeah, I just feel like if they set it in a different century where there's nothing to come after it, then you can't really, you don't run the risk of running up the back of something. Like, yeah. literally, all you've got sort of canon is you've, post-TNG, you've got Captain Braxton in the 30th century. So, you know, there's a good, like, you know, few hundred years of, you know, no space there.
And to be honest with you, he's so insignificant that even if you were to wipe him out in terms of, you know, you from a canon perspective and just say, well, he was an anomaly that existed within a bit of a time loop, you know, no one cares. No one cares enough.
I mean, it's quite interesting, I suppose, that they've now got someone from the Mirror Universe and a Klingon defector on the ship. That's sort of interesting. I don't know where to go with that. As long as they don't make it like, oh yeah, I'm gonna form the house of, like, you know, Mauve or something, and be like, oh my god, it's Worf's great grandmother.
Okay, that would be just actually. So correct me if I'm wrong, but and I know I must be wrong on this, but I thought the version of Stamets that we got back was the evil version. Did I miss something there?
I don't think he was. He seemed, because the evil version went back to his universe and continued to be generally quite evil and sniveling.
Yeah, so you know, when the two Stamets got out of the network, and by the way, they're so overused in the term network. I don't think they technically know what the network is. But when they two left the network and they appeared, I thought that they appeared in the opposite one's bodies. But then in the following episode, they behave as if they didn't. I actually
left unambiguous, like, because he kind of, he comes out, he's mushroom coma, and says, oh, I know about you, oh, I've got to go look at my plants, and then all the plants are dead. So it kind of left it, you know, to that point where, yeah, I did kind of think, have they done some kind of body switch, but I don't think there was anything sort of concrete that said, oh yeah, you know, he seems more evil, or the Mirror Universe Stamets kind of wakes up and goes, oh, this is my uniform, this is my ship, oh, where am I? Well, and, you know, I was so disappointed, like, when I seen that big Imperial Palace ship, yeah. I was convinced that ball of energy was going to be a neutron star, and I thought, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, it's about the right size. You know, it's obviously, like, it's not like a black hole, and it's not a white dwarf. It looks like it might be a neutron star. Like, oh no, it's just a mushroom ball. It's like, what? So now mycelium can form some kind of energy vortex. Like, it just seems to be the new kind of, you know, anomaly of the week where it can do anything. You know, or come get your mycelium ice cream.
No, true. Anyway, sorry, apologies, Lou. I think we've let's get back on topic, because we don't want to be here until 12:30 tonight.
Oh, I don't foresee us going too long on this one.
No,
for real this time. Hey, oh, what is there to talk about?
Okay, so what I should say here is that Paul, I used this opportunity to kind of loop you back in, because I know how much you love this particular episode, Imaginary Friend. Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe that you took this on your Desert Island trek with you, right?
As in, like, my... Yes. So, like, as in the bad one, where you're trapped...
Okay, the bad... The shipwreck.
The shipwreck trek. I don't really want to, like, watch this for flight.
You thought Paul had this on his desert island?
No, I'm winding him up. I'm winding him.
There you go. Okay.
I know he doesn't like this episode. And actually, so as a result, this is almost a way of me sabotaging the guest's score so that they come down a little, because the guests over, they're always much higher than us in their ratings, and you know, we have to bring that down sometimes.
Well, I think we'll be even today. So Paul, why don't you go ahead and continue reading on with the synopsis?
Right, okay. So, the synopsis for tonight's episode is, as the Enterprise explores a nebula, a little girl's imaginary friend becomes terrifyingly real. Ooh. This is the 22nd episode of Season 5 of Star Trek The Next Generation. The original release date was May 4th, 1992. It was written by James, help me with that pronunciation. Matthias?
I'll tell you, Matthias, yeah.
Ronald Wilkinson and Richard Feigl?
I don't know.
So, yeah, watch me butcher names. With teleplay by Edith Swenson and Brannon Braga. You can definitely see the Brannon Braga influence on this episode, can't you? Just, like, weird rubbish. And directed by Gabriella Bermont. Guest stars include Nolly. Now, who is Nolly?
What's her name? Nolly.
Nolly. Manoli Thornton. Shay Astar as Isabel. That's quite a fancy name for a not very fancy named character. Jeff Allen as Daniel Suter. Brian Bosnial as Alexander Rosyanko. Now, is that the same guy that kind of became a bit of a kind of serial killer looking man?
So you have to use the, as long as you're using the word looking man I think we're on good ground.
Patty Yakuzke as Lana Ogawa.
Yasutake,
yeah. And Sheila Franklin as Ensign Felton, with guest stars Whoopi Goldberg as Guinan. Well, thanks for giving me that intro with some very hard to pronounce names. Certainly not very, let's call them British names. So, what did you guys think about this episode?
Hey, how about you first? You're the guest.
So, as James said, I wouldn't say this is one of my favourite episodes, but as I've got older, I have sort of mellowed towards it. I don't hate it with the ferocity that I once did. So it's sort of just one of those filler episodes that, you know, if I ever rewatch a season of Star Trek, I'm not strict. You know, I'm kind of like with Star Trek that I am with diets. You know, you kind of start off with the intention that you will kind of behave every day and follow the path exactly. But, you know, by the time you get into episode 22, let's say day 22 of the diet, you see this, you're going to go, nah, I'm just going to eat the muffin. That one's getting skipped. I think the problem is with this episode is I don't really have anything to relate to in it. Now, I would have assumed that Lou and James, since you both have children, and at one point they were young children, or maybe still are young children, that you might have more to relate to in this episode than I do. Have any of your kids ever had imaginary friends? Not saying like demonic ones that come from a nebula, but, you know, have you gone through the imaginary friend, or, you know, talking to the woman on the end of the bed at night, that sort of thing?
I'm not in, I don't want to be a generalist here, but is that really even a thing, or is it just a thing in fiction? Because we've certainly not.
Like, all I have to really go on with how it is to have children is from fiction.
Yeah, we've certainly not come across imaginary friends.
Lou, any of your kids have got imaginary friends?
No. I only have one kid. She never had an imaginary friend.
Oh. Well,
I don't know.
I was wrong in my assumption then. You will be like me and totally dumbfounded at how simplistic and rubbish this episode is.
Yeah. Okay, so my initial thoughts, it's a shame you people can't see my camera right now, because it's... Doc, what about you?
Well, I think that's a little unfair, per se, but, I mean, I find this episode to be slow. I find it to be... It's kind of nothing, right? I mean... You know, yeah. if we want to take the great episodes of TNG and say, you know, really, you know, what did this teach us this week? What was it trying to say? You know, in what spectacular way did they weave in like an action storyline along with a B plot to develop characterization and somehow kind of, you know, they mirrored each other in their, you know, in their escalations and, you know, the thought provoking setup that they had? No, none of that here. This is just nonsense. It's just, I don't think it's nothing more than that, right?
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
why, and they keep saying fragment of energy. What the hell? Have I had my rant about energy yet?
Not for a while.
Well, it's just that in Trek, every now and again, they like to use this term energy. And what they mean by energy is almost like, ooh, spooky thing that is a little bit of a woo. And you don't get fragments of energy. That's not what energy is. Energy is... I get very frustrated when they think that energy is something... different and not what it is. You know, energy is a property of matter. Anything has energy. It's a property in the same way color is property. You don't go, ooh, color fragments.
You do not see the strings.
Yeah, but
they were mm-hmm. a giant ball, like just a yarn of energy strings.
Yeah, but that sentence doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. You can't have a bowl of energy strings.
Exactly. I think that's why there's so many writers and so many teleplays. They all couldn't agree on what they wanted, and they just came up with crap.
Yeah, well, to be honest with you, like, I get the impression that the thing about the Nebula, they put around the story of the, you know, of the, hey... You know, wouldn't it be great if there was an imaginary friend who actually turned out to be real and was because it was an alien?
Just make it come from a nebula.
Yeah, but hang on, haven't we already done this? Didn't we do this back in season 3 with the bonding? Not with the imaginary friend, but with the mum. That, you know, mum dies, person's very, very sad, and so an alien comes into basically the bedroom and tries to comfort the child because he doesn't want pain. Well, it's kind of the same story rehashed.
Reverse. Oh, yeah. Reversed.
No, sure.
It's sort of almost like, you know, the opposite kind of, the traditional sci-fi trope of alien visitor comes and, you know, take me to your leader. It's like, no, let's just find the most mindless child and talk to them.
And at the end, by the way, I thought that, you know, Patrick Stewart tried to give a decent speech, but, you know, it was decent enough at the end. And he brought up a couple of things, like, yes, as a race, we would want to be judged about how we treat our children. But then, you know, Isabella turns around and says, well, you were really bad to her because you didn't let her go where she wanted to go. And at no point did I really feel that... either the, you know, whatever, the Clara or Isabella were actually being told that they can't do things. They seemed happily wandering around 10 forward and engineering. They didn't get into trouble for any of this. I mean, the dad might have just had a bit of a hump every now and again, but it's not as if they had been punished or anything.
I mean, I think the problem is the main character development that goes into this episode is put into... sort of two characters that we never see again, that mainly being Isabella and the dad. And the dad seemed like quite an interesting character. Like, you know, oh, it's a single dad on the Enterprise. And, you know, weirdly there's still children here. Like, you know, only this, you know, sometimes episodes we kind of sort of forget that there's children on the ship, and you know, it's just that weird kind of TNG thing of, you know, when you don't watch TNG for a while and then you come back to it, it's kind of like that weird thing of, oh yeah, there's a school on board and children.
Well, we don't ever hear from him again because he gets shipped off after this one.
And then, like, you know, it causes Isabella to make even more imaginary friends.
Yes. Well, the thing's actually, in this episode, Geordi's not the best manager in the world, because there's a bit where, you know, when his child comes in and disturbs Geordi, and then after the child goes, the ensign says, "Oh, I'm sorry about that, Commander." He kind of just looks at him and goes, "Hmm?" And then he doesn't say, "Oh, no, that's okay. No, we appreciate that you're a single dad and you're having to struggle to make ends meet, and this child might have, you know, deep psychological problems that you might need actual counseling for." No, he's just like, you know, "I'm certain that Geordi will be putting him on the next, you know, next shipment out to the, I don't know, to another ship."
And Geordi isn't really very good at anything, I don't think. Like, I just think Geordi is, like, he's just a massive dick to most of the other crew. Like, he name one person apart from, you know, his android fetish for Data that he actually gets on with. Like, he likes Data just because he's a robot and he can play with him.
Right. He knows where his off switch is.
Yeah. Oh, look, it's like a living computer. It's just like the Enterprise computer, only it's, like, shoved into a mannequin. This is great.
So you're saying that Data and Geordi are in some kind of quasi-marriage where Geordi gets to be the head of the household because he can fiddle with Data.
It's like Geordi's Xbox.
There you go. Shut him off when needed.
Yeah, I'm going to play one, and then when I've had my fun, I'll just turn him off, and, you know, when he gets boring, I'll just, you know, install a new game, or in Data's case, like, some kind of subroutine. Oh, he's got emotions now. Oh, cool. You know, I just download the update from my Xbox, and, you know, now it talks to me. How great.
All right. Okay, so... Okay, I'm not one to criticize Counselor Troy's technique, but... well, sometimes I do. But it seems that actually participating in the imaginary friend stuff, is that really the right treatment? I mean, is she trying to stop the delusion or participate in it? I wasn't quite clear.
I kind of think, like, you know, most things, like, with kids, if you try and outrightly kind of ban them from something, it almost is active encouragement to, you know, keep going with it, or, you know, delve more into it. I think it's almost sort of like trying to talk to her on her level and not make her something that she's, like, ashamed of or wants to do in secret. I think, like, the main fear is that if you put somebody off too much, they continue doing it, but they just then do it in secrecy. And the only benefit of the imaginary friend at this point of view is that it's not something she's hiding from anybody. She's kind of openly talking and discussing it with the adults, and she doesn't really want it to become a sort of secret and talking to her in the corner and not telling any adults about it thing.
Actually, so one thing I do know, though, is that, I mean, in terms of, it's a slight tangent on imaginary friends, but when children have trouble sleeping and they have, like, nightmares and they think that there are, like, monsters in the cupboard and stuff like that, I do know that the advice on that is that you should not, you know, you don't tell them that they're not there. So you don't just say, "No, they're not there, you didn't see it." You can't argue, you know, for someone who believes that they've seen it, you can't argue it out. You have to say, "Well, you know, you acknowledge it must have been there," and then you'll come in and make sure that, you know, the coast is clear, and you'll make sure that you watch them more carefully and that kind of stuff. But I have been told that if a child comes to you and believes that there are monsters under the bed, you simply can't just, you know, tell them to shut up and send them back. And I imagine, really, you know, Troy here is just playing through that kind of thing. Actually, talking about Troy, can I just point out that she's dreadful in this episode again? As we've mentioned on many occasions, Lou, the writers just completely cut off her legs and they leave her stranded. So not only can't she sense, she can't sense Isabella, because, you know, why would she? But she also can't sense the change in Clara, the child. So she has gone from a state, and this is a human child, she's gone from a state of believing imaginary friends and might believe them as being real or might not, into actually haven't seen The Imaginary Friend. Apparently has, you know, no impact on Kara's emotions in any way. And then when she starts threatening, she doesn't seem to catch onto it. And when she goes into the room and starts looking around, you know, at no point does Troy kind of cotton onto the fact that this is a child being genuine, and there's been like a significant change in her kind of playful imaginary friend a fantasy into this much more serious, I've seen a human girl that's making me do things that I don't want to do. And it's as if in this episode, Troy's written as if she's human. And a gullible one at that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. So the ship is investigating the FGC-47. Yeah, 47 Nebula, which was formed around a neutron star. Doc, fill us in. What did they just say?
Which it's just a dust cloud around a neutron star.
Oh, good. That explains that.
Nothing really to say. I did actually have to say when they came out with the name, before they started talking about, we'll call it the LaForge Nebula, I did think, oh, I suppose the writers were on break that day. They couldn't come up with a decent name for this thing.
Yeah.
But then when they referenced it later on, I thought, okay, yeah, they were trolling me.
And they didn't do their textbook thing of like trying to explain what a neutron star was. Like, do you normally do the there's normally like some kind of exposition character that'll say, Geordi, what is a neutron star? And Geordi will say, look it up.
Yeah. Hell if I know.
How did you get through the academy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. FGC. Frickin' goofy crap. That's what it means.
Does it?
I don't know. That's what I'm guessing.
So if we assume that this alien energy thing is traveling through space and sees the Enterprise and detects all its life forms and can somehow read their imaginations, are they trying to say that because like children have the most vivid imagination, that's why they're sort of drawn to this idea of the imaginary friend and decide to manifest as that? They don't really kind of explain that like very well of why everyone on the ship, this energy field or energy wave or energy like poop is drawn towards some little girl's imaginary friend. Like, they don't really have any explanation for it.
Mm.
And in a way, if, I mean, at the end of the episode, we're kind of told that this particular, you know, these life forms, they wanted something, right? They wanted energy. They thought there was more, you know, more energy here. In a way, isn't this like the worst way about going about, you know, either investigating for the energy or extracting the energy? I just don't see what, you know, real, what gain is there? Yeah, if, you know, just turn yourself into a, you know, usual crewman, extra-looking dude, and just wander around the place. You don't need to be turned into the imaginary friend and then have to convince her to do stuff.
That's not inconspicuous at all, like a 12-year-old girl walking around the ship.
Yeah, it seems like an odd one.
Hmm. They should have picked Alexander's imaginary friend. Wonder what that would be.
Yeah, just, I don't know, what would his imaginary friend be? Alexander is just like, you know, the most, after watching Discovery and like all the Klingons and that, I know you won't really see any Klingon children, but you know, I just always find the character Alexander like really hard to kind of believe that he's like basically such a little wimp.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you broke my clay thing. I was working really hard on it. It's like, your dad doesn't want that cup. What your dad wants is a man.
Yeah.
And then the way that Alexander, I mean, actually, I think the child actors in this episode in general are not the greatest in the world. I'll go out on the ledge there. But Alexander's doing his, you're being really mean, and, you know, but when the thing falls over, right, it could easily be an accident, and he seems to take so much offense at it, And then says, "Oh, you know, imaginary friends aren't, you know, imaginary people aren't, or invisible people aren't real," and goes off in a huff.
Yeah,
it's quite painful.
But like, I imagine, like, what would you? Because Worf either has like either a sort of Spock-like non-emotional reply to things, or he has a hyper-aggressive thing. He has no like middle ground. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine Alexander going home like, "What did you do at school today?" It's like, "Well, I made a cup and some little girl broke it." And it's like, "Did you break her neck?"
Like, I was just thinking that. Why didn't Alexander say, "I should kill you"?
But it's like they just kind of write him as this, like, you know, total kind of bedwetter of a kid.
Yeah. All right. So while we're in the nebula, a little ball of light is taking the tour of the ship. Little ball of light, huh? Doesn't that sound familiar? It's like deja vu. But this time, nobody gets pregnant. That's a good thing.
Well, at least it's been a while. I think it's been a while since we've had one of these alien abductions from an area. Actually, hang on. I'm about to say this, but what did we have last week? we basically had the same thing last week. It was back on the Luxana episode where they happened to capture something
that's
that made its
that's going to say. So, when you say last week, what do you mean? The what we actually did or what got posted?
Hey, don't tell people about time travel. No, there's no time travel here. But they did scoop something up. But prior to that episode of scooping something up, this is the first time we've had them scooping something up and then that going and being a character since, I think, The Child. But maybe I'm wrong.
She's one creepy little girl, though.
No, it must be other ones.
The Child was the only other ball of light that I could think of. Scooping up somebody, we got the two-dimensional beings that pulled the ship in a certain direction. We got caught in their wake. What else?
We got the thing in Lonely Among Us as well, which was basically another Nebula-like people that overtook the captain. I mean, there have been a bunch of them.
Okay. So when she's in the Arboretum, basically, when Isabella comes to life, was that Miss Kyle that was walking past her?
I didn't notice.
It looked like her. I wasn't sure if anyone would have noticed that. But
one thing I did notice is the Arboretum is one of those things that's not kind of remastered in HD very well. Like, every plant looks very plasticky.
Yeah, right. So I think that most of this story is about an imaginary friend who seems to come to life and do nothing but make another little girl do things that she knows she shouldn't do and gets in trouble for it. So, having said that, I guess it's time to give our ratings for this episode.
Well,
oh, wait, that's right. There was a little problem with the ship, wasn't there? We keep slowing down, but hell, we don't know why.
It was almost like, you know, they were shoving, like, you know, a bit of Velcro into, like, a ball of wool. And then they're like, "Oh, we keep shoving and we keep getting more stuck." And you're like, well, you know, maybe genius engineer Geordi should have, like, maybe said, "Oh, maybe it's not really a good idea to be, like, driving into all these strands."
So it's almost the equivalent, right, of, you know, someone driving their car off-road into a field. And they start getting slower and slower and slower, and they keep going, try to go faster, and eventually they get stuck in the mud. And then they go, "Well, we didn't see that coming."
It's just when they said, "I think we should turn the ship around," and they go, "Oh, there's all these strands the other way." Like, yeah, but surely you've kind of already broken through them. Like, surely, like, it's better to go back the way you came, where there's, like, you know, at least you know you've kind of cleared some kind of path.
And you also, I mean, you don't know whether you're in the middle or not, right? They could have come, like, you know, 10% of the way. And no, only a lunatic would then go, "Oh, let's just do the next 90% just to be as a safe way out." Obviously, you turn back as soon as you run into this kind of thing.
And also, what I didn't like in the end, once Picard's done his, like, you know, standing on his soapbox and, like, giving a speech about, like, children and, you know, the imaginary friend then goes, oh, like, maybe you're not so bad after all. All we really wanted was, like, some energy. Like, basically, your ship was the equivalent of, like, Nebula biscuits. Like, you know, you were just so tasty, we couldn't resist. And then at the end, he's like, fire some energy beam into the nebula. I was like, what is that? Like, you basically, like, leaving them a bag of crisps, going, oh, you know, thanks for letting us go. Here's a little treat.
There's no real way of, I mean, just firing a whole lot of stuff. It's what guarantees that they're going to be able to use it, right?
Yeah,
it's like saying, like, oh, you know, we happen to befriend a little, you know, a little dog or so out on a walk, so we're going to give him what, you know, a whole load of Pringles. Yeah. Let's hope he can get through them.
We bought a KFC.
A lot of Pringles. Oh, that's funny.
But yeah, also, like, do you know, I thought they might do something like, they might say, oh, you're photon torpedoes or something. They're like, oh, fire some torpedoes into the nebula. Or it's like, no, just redirect an energy beam into the nebula. Like, redirect it where? What energy? It, like, seemed like just so generic at the end. It was, like, I think that's kind of like Brandon Braga all over it, isn't it? It's just like, well, pick a sort of sci-fi buzzword and just say it.
So the child's dad, Ensign Suter, I guess, he keeps getting moved around job to job to job, but he never gets promoted. Do you think it's because he's just a bad employee?
So I'm going to be really, really, really nasty here, which is that, now, how old was the guy? Like 35? Like 40?
Yeah.
Something like
about
that?
There.
I mean, if I really, really don't mean, I'm saying this in jest, just to be clear. I don't want hate mail. But if you're touching 40 and you're basically on the bottom rung of the ladder in your job, and you're doing this, just look after your kid. Don't worry about this. You know, look after the kid for a couple of years, and then go back into Starfleet after the kid's, you know, gone to university in like 5 years or so. It's clear that his current career path is not progressing as he would like. You know, Geordi is probably younger than him, and he's what, four ranks above. So just step back, concentrate on the things that are important to you, and then you know, reassess in a few years' time. I mean, it's not as if they have money or anything like that to worry about.
Well, there's just no ambition there, so he must be a lousy employee. Oh, well.
Maybe he's sort of like a mature student, like, you know, maybe he didn't go to like Starfleet University. Maybe he's like gone to the Open University. He just kind of, you know, done his base degree by sitting at home on his sort of TNG iPad thing.
Yeah.
I guess. So the girls, after they leave engineering, which they never should have been there to begin with, they bump into Worf. I mean, literally, bam, right into Worf. And it's funny. Not only did he not growl at them, I think he actually smirked when he walked off.
That's because he's thinking, I could have taken you both on.
There's nothing melts or Klingons have children at play.
Yeah.
Now, why about it? If I was security chief, I would expect my security chief maybe to know and recognize all people on the ship. Certainly all, you know, underage girls on the ship, surely.
Now that doesn't sound right. For a couple reasons. One, I wanted to go into, but the other is, how is he going to remember, what is it, 1,400? Is it 1,400 people on that ship?
Yeah, or something like that.
How's he going to remember everyone?
But you're together for like 6 years, right?
Yeah, but everyone comes and goes.
Well, I mean, a fair number of people get killed, but I would expect them to know. It's not, I mean, at least the kids? Surely you need to know how many kids there are. I doubt
probably
there are
quite
more
a
than,
few, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's like five kids. Okay.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, how many kids? Top. How many kids? What, 100 kids?
About 100 kids, I'd say.
Okay,
that.
Of which 50 are girls? Of which maybe, what, 30 are about, you know, about that age? I think he should be able to remember that.
And he has a kid, so generally people with kids kind of know people with kids.
Oh, I don't think Worf hangs out with the other parents on the ship. Yeah.
So, I actually, 2 days ago, I went to parents' evening. I was brought into like an evening of educational methods for improving literacy and numeracy for our 5 and 6 year olds. So there was 5 and 6 year old classes, and I was kind of dragged into this. And yeah, I kind of sat around with all the other mums and dads, and I have to say that I don't recognize anyone, but I know my wife would know every single one in the room. So maybe Worf is a bit like me in terms of a relatively neglectful and kind of, you know, a half-assed parent in that respect.
Well, that sounds exciting, James. All right. Okay. Well, we talked about Geordi and, you know, telling Sutter about his past and his mom did this, his dad this, he was caught in the middle. And, you know, children, I was listening to Geordi going, oh, crap. He's being the guy's counselor. He doesn't know.
This was, oh yeah, Geordi, it's all about you again.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he's basically trying to say to the guy, like, you know, I kind of live that lifestyle and look how I turned out. And he's probably looking back and like, yeah, look how you turned out.
At that point, he's probably writing his resignation letter there and then. I'm going to be a painter. See ya.
Okay, so this was a terrible, terrible episode that had one really cool moment in there for a couple minutes, and that was Data and Guinan making animals out of the cloud.
Yes, it was.
he couldn't understand how people could see things in inanimate objects, and then he ends it with, clearly it's a bunny rabbit.
It's sort of like, this is the thing about TNG, I think, like, annoying about Data, and it's like something that it gets worse as the seasons and the movies progress of, you know, they kind of have it both ways. Data is a super genius, but he's also got the mind of a child. And they kind of pick one extreme or the other. And I'm assuming, like, Data virtually has, like, the internet in his head.
Yeah.
So if he doesn't understand something, he has, like, you know, the research capability to form an intelligent opinion of it, surely, rather than just like, you know, oh, I don't understand.
Yeah, right.
So, well, surely there's like some context in your, like, what kind of data, what do they talk about their it's not petabytes or what is it, these gigaquads of data?
Yeah, gigaquads, teraquads, something like that.
I always find that quite annoying about how they kind of treat Data. You know, it sort of gets even worse with the emotion chip. It's like, oh no, now I've got emotions to understand as well. And you're like, oh, you barely mastered clouds, and now you're like managing tears.
Yeah.
I think on occasion they can do it well, by the way. And I think on occasion these moments are the ones that I kind of enjoy. But you know, you are right. They basically have Data behaving either as a child or as a supercomputer as needed. There's a bit in this, I think there was a bit on a couple of weeks ago where it was very clear that Data was making a statement that if he did have access to information or any kind of, you know, vague amount of computing power, he wouldn't need to make that statement. And in this episode, you know, there's a bit where he's talking to Guinan, and he's saying, oh, it's, you know, you find meaningful patterns in essentially random things. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of like well known and it's clear and it's not really a problem. I don't, you know, he shouldn't be surprised by that. That's almost, you know, frankly, it's probably one of the most basic things that a human mind can actually give you. The other thing he does is he's talking to Geordi and he's talking about, oh, we will be able to complete the scan in time. And he's asking Geordi, we will be able to complete the scan in time. And then Geordi goes, yeah, because we'll double the bandwidth and then we'll be able to do it twice as fast. And then Data kind of goes, oh, yeah, well, yeah, that's interesting. Now, why the hell wouldn't Data be able to... He should be streets ahead of Geordi on all of this.
And in other scenarios, like Data, let's not run the numbers or get Geordi to do it. You can tell us off the top of your head, what's the probability of, you know, this versus that? And he just goes, oh, it's 23-1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, now you can't work out, like, you know, essentially, like, the loading bar on Windows is what Geordi's kind of saying. Oh, and he's like, oh, yeah, well, okay, I'll just say what you say, Geordi. That's fine. But, like, it shows you, like, how sort of, you know, well, how light this episode is that you can... That stands out, because it should be sort of like a throwaway comment, but there's so little to kind of talk about. Like, you know, you can almost kind of like almost this episode is you can sum it up in the title: Imaginary Friend. The end.
Yeah,
right.
True.
Imaginary friend. The end. So Guinan had an imaginary friend herself.
No, she didn't.
Not a he. Not a she. It was a Tarkasian razor beast, and it was really scary when he smiled, kind of like Worf, except for it had the softest purr, not like Worf. I don't know, Worf might have a soft purr.
It sounded like she had an imaginary pet, and not an imaginary friend.
Right.
Well, it might have indeed just been a pet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like if you, one of your children, James, came up and said, "I got an imaginary friend that kind of it licks its paws and it barks," and you go, "Okay, well, sure." And that's an imaginary dog, but like you know, you can call it your friend if you want.
Yeah, no, sure.
All right. Go ahead.
I mean, it's strange that, I mean, obviously the you know, Whoopi Goldberg doesn't turn up every single week, right? Yeah, and we're getting very close to some Whoopi-heavy episodes, both in terms of Eyeborg and also at the end of the season when we hit a hit Time's Arrow.
Yeah.
I assume that there's some type of budget you can spend on Whoopi. why is she on in this episode? It's, I mean, unless she was able to turn these out, I don't know, in between outtakes of Eyeborg. I'm just really surprised they even spent the money getting her here.
She didn't have anything to do.
Like, maybe she's like, well, on the 10th of January, I can do, like, you know, 6 hours. And they're like, oh, well, that falls in when we're going to be shooting episode 22 is season 5. So, you know, we'll just kind of write her apart. And she can, like, her and Troy can... They can be really, you know, interchangeable. If Whoopi's around, she can do the kind of "oh, I sense danger," and if Whoopi's not there, then you know we'll give that bit to Troy. And since Whoopi's here, that's why Troy can't sense anything this episode, because Guinan's got to be the one that does that.
Well, I mean, you know, Deanna might have had an imaginary friend. Triple chocolate fudge cake. That's her imaginary friend.
Yeah, it's almost like the whole depth to her character is, well, there must be something wrong with you if you don't want chocolate.
Yeah.
I mean, I was about to suggest that Troy didn't have an imaginary friend. She was merely being haunted by the ghost of her dead sister.
Yeah.
But maybe that's been a bit too harsh.
Dead sister? That doesn't... What? I've never seen her anything about her dead sister yet.
Not yet. We will. We'll get there.
Talk about time travel. Okay. Let's see here. Okay, so... You know, I guess the whole strands of life form thing. Did you guys remember how many there were?
There were...
Wasn't it like 42 many? Million?
Yeah.
How many, what?
Was it 42 million or something?
Oh, no, you're close. But what's that magic number?
47 million.
47 million. Ha ha! Get it? Yeah. And that must be why they call it FGC 47. Yes, clever writers. Took 5 of them and they still couldn't do it right.
It doesn't really seem like 47 million for an entire nebula is particularly a lot. That seems, in fact, it seems like, you know, very small.
Yeah, well, some were small, some were big, you know. I mean, just like us, some were small, some were big. I did kind of like Alexander kind of getting tortured by Isabella, though. Bust the cup, and clay to the back of the head. Clara! Oh, well. But then even Deanna later gets a dose of whoop-ass from Isabella, doesn't she?
Yeah, she gets all the energy sucked from her.
Oh, yeah.
And like, you know, and they didn't even do, like, you know, the normal energy-sucking effect. But, oh, my God, it's aged her 20 years. Her hair's gray and she's got wrinkles now.
That comes later, doesn't it? Anyway. So when the others come, you will die with everyone else. That girl was just creepy.
And now I've got red eyes, so you know I'm mad.
Yes.
Don't you think that was a bit... Why did Isabella go crazy so quickly? What was that about?
And because she got ignored.
She was ignored. And
so, but we're... So she's supposed to be some life form that lives in the energy vortex thing of the nebula. They probably have a ship go by that nebula once every 1,000 years or so. This is probably the most contact she's had with another kind of sentient human or another being in ever. She's ignored for an hour or two, and then she throws a strop, and then she decides to kill everyone. What is this? I'm not sure how does it all connect. I mean, is it even that these life forms, did they even die? Did they even reproduce? Why would they be able to kind of come into our bodies or project into into a little girl and even understand the concepts of? I mean, I'm going to park aside things like English and how she communicates, but things like, you know, how does she know about death and what would cause a small child to be fearful? I mean, it's just weird.
It's almost like the life forms took on a childlike thought pattern. They were thinking like a child. I think doesn't Isabella say basically it's the way you treat your children? We don't like that. We're going to kill you all. And then Picard has to talk to her as a parent, trying to understand why we have to treat our children the way we do and keep them out of danger.
Yeah, I think that you're almost kind of giving the context of the episode more credit than it deserves, because these are things that they could have broached, like, you know, this energy that didn't really have any understanding of emotion until it took the form of a human girl, and now it's in a world that's struggling to understand. You know, there's nothing as deep as that. It's this, you know, you said no to children. That make energy waves sad. Energy wave destroy the ship now.
Yeah, exactly. It has a child maturity.
You know,
and it wants to kill him because of it.
I've just experienced sentience for the first time, and I'm going through my adolescence, and I don't have any context. I don't know what these children are. I didn't realize. Like, I thought all humans were eternal, like energy waves. I didn't understand linear time. You know, there's none of that. It's just, oh, you told me I couldn't do stuff. Now I've got sad pants.
I mean, I just feel like I can relate more to the probe from Voyage Home than I can to this girl.
Yeah.
The sausage probe. Okay. Well. Okay.
And also, did anyone else also find kind of Isabella in general to be kind of mean-spirited and
creepy?
And creepy, and to the extent that I would imagine that Clara wouldn't want to play with her. It's like, oh, she, if this is the way that she behaves in her mind when she was believe in her to be imaginary, and then she comes to life, and it turns out that, you know, it's a bit like, we might be friends over the internet, we might talk about Star Trek, but when we meet up in person, you know, all you want to do is visit strip bars and go to go out drinking. It would be very strange, and I would question certain things that we've obviously built up over the years, and surely there must have been a jarring point for Clara seeing Isabella behave like this.
She, I guess the best word to say is she's a little bitch.
That's not the best way to say it.
That's kind of the nicest way I can think of it. And besides, you know, James, we did actually go to the M&M and Coca-Cola museums.
We did.
So we were absolutely going crazy in Las Vegas, you know, visiting all the best joints.
Yes.
So... But, no, she just comes across as just a little evil snot.
It's almost like stereotypical 90s evil. Like, your basis for horror is, like, you know, a girl with that like, stares at things and has, like, you know, a resting bitch face, and that's, that's meant to be scary. And then, obviously, when they were editing it together, like, she doesn't quite look intimidating enough. What can we do to make her look more intimidating? If somebody goes, make the eyes red.
It's almost like Geordi's daughter.
She's not really self-obsessed enough to be Geordi Starr.
Yeah, that's true. All right. So the only way to save the day is to make the little girl happy and, you know, teach her that we're on a peaceful mission. We mean you no harm. We'll let you run through the ship. We'll let you go and visit engineering and tend forward, whatever. Just don't kill us, okay? They'll even build a play area. That's it. They're going to build a play area for the children on the ship. Would that make you happy? Why can't kids go into tend forward? It's not like a bar in a traditional sense, is it?
I assume that there's like... Because it's like it seems to be more of a sort of chill out place for adults where there's alcohol. I assume it's like, you know, sort of bars here where, you know, it's sort of up to them whether they allow children in or not. But in general, most pubs, bars don't really allow children in after like, you know, 7-8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, maybe things get rowdy on a Friday night at 10-4. Yeah. Riker probably has hangovers every Sunday morning.
Maybe they're just trying to protect the children from Riker.
What?
But maybe that's the whole point. The whole point is that when Riker came on board, they made it very clear that, you know, the children would not be allowed in 10-4, so that then Riker can... You know, he can behave in a certain way so that anything in 10-4 is fair game.
Hmm. I wonder if Clara can just go to the holodeck anytime she wants.
I kind of get the impression that the holodeck is a bit like a swimming pool. It's sort of like something you can't really just do on your own as a kid until you reach like a certain age. Like, you know, you wouldn't say to your 5-year-old, like, okay, fine, that's it, I'll drop you off at the pool and come get you when you're done. You know, it requires constant adult supervision until you get to an age where you're kind of quite confident that, you know. In fact, would you ever let your child use a holodeck? Probably not, because most episodes that it is the main plot point and it inevitably goes wrong.
Yeah, they could die in there. Alright. So, let's see. They gave them all the energy they can absorb. Just give it to them. They allowed us to go. They didn't kill us. Let them go.
It was mentioned earlier, but it's still a bit weird. You know, in what form do you send across the energy? You know, do you send it across in terms of muffins, or do you send it in the sense of, you know, photon torpedoes? You know, one might be more easy for them to digest than the other. And, yeah, it's nitpick here and there.
I'm sure it took Geordi a week to figure it out. Well, anyway, I got nothing more.
Well, there's very little that this episode gives, right? It's, I mean, when we've been talking, I did look at Memory Alpha, and it seems that, you know, both Brandon Braga and Rick Berman and others thought this episode came out okay. So I don't know how low they were lowballing in this to begin with to be happy with the result. But they seem to be of the opinion this like worked out well. I mean, maybe
the average rating seems to be like sort of like, you know, a 2.5 out of 5. It's sort of, you know, it's middle of the road. So it's obviously not like a widely hated episode.
I'm sorry. Well, that was, you know, it is time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. And did I just hear you say yours is a 2.5?
Well, no, like, the internet in general seemed to, like, you know, I know most things kind of generally kind of, you know, some people love them, some people hate them, so they kind of equal out in the middle. But, you know, I would have thought this, in the kind of general opinion of the internet, would be one of the lower rated ones.
Yeah, right. Well, then, why don't you go ahead and tell us what your thoughts, final thoughts are, and give it a rating then.
So, I would describe this episode as skippable. You know, if you never seen this episode because you missed it on the original TV run, and you're just coming back to TNG now, you're not going to miss anything by not seeing this episode. It develops none of the main cast. There's no lasting ideals. It doesn't really make sense. It's not that well acted. Then there's not really a plot. So, is it a one star? Well, you can't say it's, you can't really say it's a one star, because then, like, surely that's reserved for the very worst episode ever. Does it deserve 2 stars? No. So can I give it a 1.5?
Oh, I was worried you're going for 3 then. Does it deserve 1? Nope. Does it deserve 2? Nope. Then I'll give it a 3.
Yeah. 1.5. Okay. I'll go next. That way we can end the episode on the most positive note. Let's see here. This is what I wrote. Blah, blah, blah. In fact, 47 blahs to the 47th power. Now, that's a lot of blahs. Whatever that equals. The show stinks. It stinks to high strands of hell. Okay? 47 million strands of hell, to be exact. Get it? 47?
We got it.
Yeah. There are too many writers, too many teleplays, and even the poor director probably lost control of it early on. They probably just couldn't agree on anything, and they just made this mess of an episode. This one is a reason why people don't like child actors. And usually I do in certain ways, but in this one, not at all. This wasn't a good fit. The little girl was creepy and just, ugh. And even when she tried to make a smile, I winced. Data and Guinan make an animal out of the clouds. That's funny. That's funny. I wonder which one of those geniuses thought of that one. And as you said that, James, I just noticed on Memory Alphas, I went to look where they possibly could have said they liked this one. That was actually written for Dr. Crusher and Troy, and then later for Guinan and Troy, and whatever. They rewrote it to, obviously Data was the best one, because he comes out with this, why do humans do that? Oh, by the way, it is a bunny rabbit. Whatever. It's okay. That's okay. But it can't pull this thing out of the sewers. This episode, I hate to say, Paul, you say it's not a 1, it's not a 2. It's right up par with Angel 1 and Shades of Grey. I can't stand it. And since our rating scale, as we started this show, was 1 to 5, it's unfortunate that I just can't give it a 0.5. This absolutely is one of the worst to me. So I'm going 1. I'm going 1. 1. O-N-E. 1. And maybe when we get to lower Pylon 2, we'll change out on a scale of 0 to 5. But then again, I don't know if it's too many DS9 episodes that would rate a 0 or a 0.5. Except for maybe Calamarain, Count to 4, Calamarain, then three more, or some kind of crap like that.
That's not as bad as you remember it. That's not as bad as you remember it.
You kidding?
Yeah.
Avery must have been steaming during that. Every step and bounce he took, he must have been going...
I am a professional
actor. Well, he probably is thinking, I'm never going to get anything else after this. Just because of this one episode. But... Ooh, well, we're going to argue that point out when we get there. So I'm at a 1, because I can't go any lower. James, okay, why did you think it was a 4? Tell us.
I didn't think it was a 4. So is this a one-star episode? I'm not entirely sure, because so here's the thing that it didn't do. And this is praise in a very weird way. It didn't cause me that much pain. So it wasn't obnoxiously bad, I suppose. It didn't really come and kind of kick you in between the legs and then come back for more. It was very much a meh episode that really didn't have much going on. I don't know. It's hard, this one. It's clearly not a great episode. I don't particularly find the story engaging. I don't particularly find the kind of the B plot that they put it around to be in any way, decent or pushing us in the direction that I want to kind of carry on and hang around for the resolution of. It just seems to be a bit of a nothing episode, to be honest with you. I think they've done a lot of this stuff before. I think they've done a lot of this stuff better before. I don't do half points, of course, but I don't quite think it can be a 1, just because it wasn't, it wasn't as bad, I suppose, as maybe maybe it could have been. I think the acting is poor. I do think the writing wasn't great either. There was a nice speech by Picard at the end, I suppose. That's always something. And then I think they jump around a lot when they do this summing up and they kind of say, the only way you can communicate is through threatening a child. And then she comes back and says, oh, well, you treat your children badly. And I said, oh, no, we don't. Went, okay, then good. And then they just leave. Is that really resolution to the moral of the week? It doesn't feel like it. Maybe it is a 1. I don't know. let me be generous at least and give it a 2 out of 5 for this week, and just claim that it's certainly not a good episode.
So that's a 1.5 overall, then.
Yeah. Yeah. And would you believe that for 22 episodes, Doc, you and I now tie?
What do you mean?
We're at a 3.
Oh, really?
3.23. How did the heck that happen? 3.23 is what we're averaging. Whereas the guests still love Star Trek more than we do. 3.57.
Interesting. And this isn't planned. I mean, I'm not saying that... I'm saying both that I don't know Lou's scores going into this, but in many cases I don't even know my own. There have been many occasions where I've had like an inkling of where things are going, and we've had a chat, and I've kind of seen other people's views and kind of changed things at the last moment. Actually, one thing I noticed, I just doing some browsing and clicking, I'm afraid, I do apologize if any of that was picked up, but the director of this episode directed Lower Decks, which... That's a great episode. This all can't be bad, right? Let's just assume that this episode paid for a bit of food for the director for a couple of weeks, that then allowed them to come back and to do Lower Decks. It's not all bad.
You can't really blame the director though, because
no,
it's not as if they took a great story and portrayed it in that kind of, crappy way. They took a crappy story and did their best with it,
I suppose. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll never see them at the conventions. So. Okay.
Isn't Isabella at the conventions or Clara at the conventions? I mean,
I know Molly was.
Of course Molly was. Of course Molly was. Actually, Lou, I don't know if you I mean, we had a discussion before and you made it perfectly clear that you don't follow me on Twitter, as everyone should.
No, I do follow you on Twitter. No. I do follow. I do have you on Twitter. I just don't go to Twitter.
Okay.
I just don't mess with Twitter. I blocked it on my phone because I didn't, because I keep getting too many tweets. It just, you know, I'm not that into Twitter. If it wasn't for the show and the fact that when I post, it goes on to Twitter, I wouldn't use it at all. I have no real use for Twitter.
Well, this isn't anything really to do with Twitter, but you mentioned Molly at the conventions. I have booked my tickets for Vegas for this year.
How much were they?
I'm not going to tell you that because, I've paid quite a lot this year because I'm actually, so keep this quiet, just between us and maybe the several people that listen to the show.
Six or seven
people that listen to the show. Yeah. I have booked the wife as well. She's coming. She doesn't know yet. I'll have to tell her at some point between now and when we leave.
Oh
my goodness.
She's going to be pleased.
Oh, I mean, she's not coming to the convention. Just to be completely clear, she's
she's just going to Vegas.
She's just going to stay in the hotel. She's going to drink, cocktails at the pool. She's going to go out shopping. She's going to go to shows. She's going to do things that
like normal people do.
What normal people do. She's going to find it amusing that I'm effectively not going to be with her for most of the day, and then we're going to meet up at night, I suppose, for dinner dates and entertainment. I don't think she's coming to, she's not gonna, maybe I'll bring her in for one of the days into the convention center. We can get her a day ticket or so she can come and have a look at what kind of people her husband socializes with.
Yeah, see how goofy we really are. Wow, is it gonna be at the Rio, do you know?
What
again?
Yeah, that's where the convention is again. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, captain's chair ticket, $869.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
It is what it is. I mean, by the time things, from my perspective, by the time you fly across and you're staying over, to be honest with you, a couple of $100 on the ticket, it's neither here nor there.
That makes sense.
Especially when I'm having to also pay for the wife to be flown over.
Right. Who's going to take care of the whippers?
Okay, so this is the other thing, because this is why I'm so pleased with myself. Not only have I managed to book my flight over to Star Trek Las Vegas, and also managed to find a way of getting the wife to come across so we can have a bit of a, frankly, the first adult holiday we're going to have since the kids were born. I've also arranged it for my mum to fly in from France to look after the kids for a week. So I'm not going to say I'm playing three-dimensional chess because that's a stupid analogy, but I'm orchestrating a lot of logistics here.
Well, good. All right. August 1st through August 5th. I'm on totalrewards.com. I want to know how much the rooms are. Which, since I am an employee of Caesars now, I wonder. Oh hell, they're not going to give me any employee rates for those days.
It's not the busiest time in Vegas, right? Just because the Star Trek fans are in town.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to keep you guys on because I want to know what it is myself. It's August. What is it? August 5th through the 8th?
No. First to the 5th.
First to the 5th.
So we we land on the Monday. So we're from Monday. We do Monday to Monday or Monday to Sunday.
Okay, first to the 6th. I'll say two adults because I'd probably bring my wife too. And if we did, we have to get together, all four of us.
By the way,
that would be kind
of
cool.
Are we still part of the? Is this still part of the podcast?
Oh yeah, we haven't stopped
yet.
Sure. Well, that ain't so bad. $115 per night.
Yeah.
That ain't so bad because I would want to stay at the Rio this time if I could. The cannery was good, but it's just too much Ubering all, you know, back and forth. But yeah, that'd be interesting to do. And maybe I won't get all 5-4 days. I might just get a couple days. Okay, anyway. Paul, I don't have you again on in the future, so if you keep it this clip, then we'll be done before you ever get back on, and you'll have to wait for DS9, so...
I'm trying to think of any ones I would particularly kind of like. I seem to specialize in bad episodes. Like, I don't do praise well.
So maybe I could find one in season 6 that's terrible and you could do it.
I'm more suited to the rubbish, really.
Aquiel?
I can't even remember what happens in Aquiel.
It's when Tony falls in love with a giant, what can only be described as a turd.
Oh, yes, in fact, I remember it, yes. I'll come on for that, because, Geordi, I think, is probably the most annoying character in Star Trek, or one of.
Yeah, all right. All right, Paul, thanks for coming on again, and hopefully we'll see you in the future.
But by the time you get to Aquel, maybe we'll know, James, what Discovery Season 2's got in store.
Almost certainly, almost certainly.
By the time we get to Aquel, we may know what Star Trek Discovery has in store for Season 3.
Don't say that. It's only like 16 weeks away. We should be able to do it.
Yeah. I like your enthusiasm.
A terrifying threat from the past.
Kill it now.
Sparks a moral dilemma.
We can't leave him here. He won't survive.
And violent memories collide.
It's not a person, damn it, it's a boar.
Now, will the crew seek revenge with a daring experiment?
Sending him back to destroy the others in like some sort of walking bomb.
Or will it lead them into an enemy trap?
And then they're gonna come looking for us. And they will destroy us.
On Star Trek, The Next Generation.
All right, so everybody, join us next time as we review episode 23 for season 5, and that's going to be Iborg. And I've got Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast coming on to join us for that one. So I predict some pretty high numbers for the next at least 3, maybe 4 episodes. You concur?
I concur.
Because if not, I'll say, damn it, Jim. He hates being called Jim. Damn it, Jim. So everyone, take care. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye, skitty, bye, skitty.
Okay. And show over?
And show over.